What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out at coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice podcast. It's the entire enchilada, the chimichanga. Have you ever known me to turn down a chimmy? The long episode with Adam Gokesh dealing with his presidential candidacy. He's running for the Libertarian nomination. How he incorporates crypto, how he uses that to spread his ideas of freedom through books and activism and his arrests and his... He just goes on and on and on, his history of, of his activism career. And it's a really... That part is super interesting. And then, of course, we get into... the murder that happened in Acapulco, Mexico, of John Galton. And it is a very controversial subject, very raw right now. If I have a bias, if I have a leaning, it is actually towards the Anarchapulco team. Jeff Berwick has been a really nice guy to me. We've had very limited interactions. But those that we've had have been pleasant, and I'm a huge fan of its community organizer, its community producer, Dana Martin, who I had on in a separate podcast recently talking about Anarchapulco. So even still, Adam makes news. When Adam speaks on these issues, he has some insight. I just let him go, and I'm going to let you decide as to its value, what you think of it, and hopefully we move the story forward. Anyway, if you just want the Acapulco stuff, I put that in a separate episode. If you just want the presidential candidate stuff and you don't care about the Acapulco stuff, I have that in a separate episode. But in this one, you're going to get the entire enchilada in context as we talk about it and in order, okay? So without any further ado, here is Libertarian presidential candidate, Adam Gokesh.
So, wow, this is a long time coming. You don't know this, but I am. I go way back to your dancing days, as they're known. when you did your mall gig, and I've sort of been following you. Now, at first,
I still dance. I still dance.
That's good to hear.
Mostly alone and in the shower, but you know, I dance.
Yeah. I've followed you for a long, long time, which sounds really creepy if I take that out of context. But I've followed your career.
People who don't know, I have, and you're probably one of the few who know some of my work, who know my whole story. But like my career go as an activist, full time, goes back to 2007. When I first got involved with the Iraq Veterans Against the War and became a national public figure very quickly at that point. And then even before that, in college, I was organizing our campus libertarian group and doing various things on campus to protest the pending restrictions on the alcohol policy. That was my first college protest.
That was your gateway in.
Yeah. But just to give people the quick rundown, I was in the Marine Corps, volunteered to go to Fallujah in 2004, came back, was disgruntled, volunteered to go back, got in trouble, got pissed off, got out of the Marine Corps, and was just pissed off enough to really question things and joined Iraq Veterans Against the War. Was active full time with them. Just sort of fell over backwards into full time activism. I was getting paid, you know, a few hundred bucks here and there to give speeches, and that seemed a lot more interesting than selling insurance for Aflac and going to grad school, which is what I was doing. I kept up most of the grad school, but I never actually took the training and got certified to sell insurance, and just didn't do it because never sold any because I got involved with Iraq Veterans Against the War full time, or ran away with the circus, depending on how you want to describe that. Yeah. And then when Obama won in 2008 and the anti-war left revealed that it was more left than anti-war, I was endorsed by Ron Paul to run as a Republican for Congress in New Mexico. And I'm a lifetime member of the Libertarian Party. I have no allegiance to the Republican Party. If they want to be big tent, include libertarians, hey, I might work with them if our interests coincide. I highly, highly, highly doubt that's going to happen in any kind of credible way. I think we're gonna dissolve the government first before that would happen, or hell would freeze over, as some might say. But then I lost the primary because I made the mistake of trusting the Republican establishment there in the state. And then couldn't shut up when the race was over, so I got a radio show, and that was the start of Adam versus the Man on AM 1550 KIVA, more Puzzle Talk Radio, Albuquerque. And when it was about to get canceled after 6 months because I wasn't selling any ads, because I just wanted to talk about stuff, and I was growing pot in my apartment. So one of the first legal patient grows in New Mexico. It was a lot of fun to be able to turn a cop down at my door by showing him a little piece of plastic from the state. But yeah, fun story there. We'll get into that. But then my radio show, as it was being canceled, got picked up as a television show on RT America. And I had a TV show, the bottom rung of the legitimate TV ladder, RT America. Which means I have more of a legitimate Russian government connection than Donald Trump.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to, no. I actually worked for the Russian government. And I had a TV show, and I got canceled after 4 months because I was being critical of Putin. And it was right before the midterms that he really messed with him before the next big election there. So it was interesting experience overall, and that was 2011. I got canceled and focused on my YouTube channel for a while, got it up to 250,000 subscribers and over 70 million views, and kind of got away from that when I started getting censored. And I wrote the book Freedom, which I am here in New Orleans right now because we just gave away 204,473 copies. One for every residential mailbox in the city. So now we're just working with people here for engagement to get more people to read it and get engaged. It's and paradigm shifts like to libertarianism or anarchism or anarcho-capitalism, they don't happen overnight. And we do ourselves a disservice when we try to mythologize those transformations, because they happen quietly, privately. They usually involve books or getting, you know, as I've been told, man, I just binge watched your videos for a weekend, and I was like, okay, I get it. You know, like that happens. But it's quiet personal contemplation, at least that. So I've been focused on the book, and I'm running for the Libertarian Party nomination for president in 2020 on the platform of dissolving the entire federal government in a peaceful, orderly, responsible manner. And there are a lot of awesome tie-ins there with blockchain technology and Bitcoin and how that can be used, and how we can use this to make that transition. I'm a true believer that way. I don't have a dog in the fight between the maximalists and the cashers and the altcoiners or any of that. I just support anything that's challenging the government money monopoly that looks like an honest attempt to do that. And I'm blown away. I mean, it is Bitcoin or the blockchain or whatever you want to describe it. If you want to say blockchain technology, fine. But this is, you know, the biggest innovation that humanity's experienced probably since the internet itself.
Right. Just to interrupt you for a second, and that's why I wanted you on, is that your work is a real demonstration of the power of crypto, in the sense that the book and the numbers you cited there are kind of unbelievable. I mean, people, I don't think realize that even, you know, sort of publishing house, you know, corporate books don't get, you know,
200,000 copies delivered. Yeah.
Right. Right. They get, I mean, you'll get on the New York Times bestseller list if you sell like maybe 4,000 copies. Right. So you've managed to push this idea out, and from my understanding is a lot of your funding has come through the crypto community. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. For this book bomb project, it was actually about half and half in and out. But definitely the majority of my activism over the last 4 or 5 years has been really directly connected to cryptocurrency support. to people who have made money in cryptocurrency. It's mainly that I got a lot of my audience turned on to crypto very, very early. I spent a lot of $5 and $10 Bitcoin on the Silk Road in order to engage with the currency rather than to sit on it. And oh boy, do I wish I had sat on a lot more. But you know, I've made a few $10,000 myself, you know, over the last few years with my investments. I day traded for a little while. When I got out of jail in 2013, kind of saved my butt. There was a 2-week period there when crypto or when Bitcoin was around 800 and I was trading on BTC-E, the one that doesn't exist anymore.
Sure, I was about to
does that bring back memories for you?
Is this sure does.
Yeah, so I was day trading on there and I doubled my holdings in a 2-week period when Bitcoin was roughly flat at around $800, and it, you know, it's a great opportunity in the space. I don't keep up with it at that level now because I'm really focused on this is one of the hard lessons for me over the course of my activism. And I know, you know, you have me on to discuss this murder in Acapulco, and it's been taking up a lot of my brain space lately, unfortunately. Very sad event, but you know, I try to stay focused on, you know, the two, you know, big objectives for me that come out of my ideology of voluntarism. I'm absolutely an ideologue. I have a standard of justice. I want to see justice done in the world. I see that government, as we know it, as a coercive institution, is ethically illegitimate, and the sooner we get away from it, the better. So, in from that perspective, one of my objectives is to wake up as many as people as possible to this idea. And the second is to actually change the world works based on this idea. And, you know, if you're not doing one of those things, if you know, as an activist, you're probably off track. I don't mean to presume for other people, but like, it's taken me a long time to realize I don't care about views. I don't care about followers. I don't really care about money. You know, I have enough to be comfortable right now. I have enough to barely comfortably support a family and passive income and build up my homestead very slowly in Arizona where I live off grid if I wanted to do that. I'd like some more money. I'm not going to, you know, lie about that. But I'm barely comfortable because I put everything else right now into my activism because I believe that that's, you know, a better long-term investment, both for me and for humanity. So I'm here in New Orleans. I'm focused on this book bomb, getting people who have, a lot of people saw the book. You know, I've been invited to do a mural. I've got a local band that wants to throw a concert for me. And I've been invited back to talk to a lot of people here. And for my lawsuit about my false arrest, challenging the shall ID laws in the state of Louisiana. I've got a great lawyer who's going to take that on. I got dropped on my head when I got arrested here, a little over a month ago. But that's a story for another time. People can look that up.
But you went to, because there's so much to talk about with you.
I'm focused on that. I'm focused on that, the book, waking people up, getting to read the book. I'm considering bringing back the Adam versus the Man podcast as a daily 1-hour because I know that also helped wake a lot of people up. I'm really, just so you know, I'm really apprehensive about it because I never want to have to worry about distribution and social media stuff with it ever again. You know, I have to, I never want to worry about production myself ever again to do the quality that I want to do that right. I'm looking for a significant investment, you know, something like around $50,000-$60,000 to launch it properly, to build a portable studio and all that. So I'm like, you know, it would, and just with all the censorship on social media, you know, I got to be able to hire someone and pay them reliably and say, look, you're not going to lose your job because YouTube screwed us again or because, you know, the market tanked and Steam isn't worth anything. You know, so I got to, if I'm going to hire someone, you know, at this point in my career, I got to be responsible about it and have, you know, a reliable way to pay them. So that, and then the presidential campaign is really just about organizing delegates within the Libertarian Party to win the nomination. I'm doing interviews with that, you know, mainstream outside of that, but really the focus is just working within the Libertarian Party, building up the Libertarian Party, and bringing our people into the Libertarian Party who know how to show up and be delegates. So that, sorry, that's all I got there.
No. People want to hear you, not me. So I'm glad you're getting it out there. That's a nice way to kind of frame your background. I can't believe you're unfamiliar with Adam Kokesh, but if you are, just Google the guy, and I mean, you will spend. It's a giant rabbit hole of activism. He's been out everywhere. He's tried unconventional ways to bring attention to different issues. There's
almost 12 years of full time activism, and I've been arrested, over 50 times now, mostly civil disobedience.
Yeah, and the latest one in New Orleans was really interesting because I got the live stream of it, and I think you put it up there, and it just kind of went viral for a little while, and I'm laughing more at the absurdity than I am.
Oh no, yeah, it is. It's hilarious. I never want anybody to think of me as like please, and a lot of activists do this, and a lot of what I've presented in the past has kind of been based on this. But like, please don't pity me ever.
No, but it was more like just the absurdity. So if you've never been to Louisiana, the parts of the what we call the expressway or the super highway or whatever you want to call it are just filthy. And so Adam's idea was to take a stencil, and which is the rough equivalent of the title of his book, take a stencil and power wash. So he's effectively cleaning the side of this barrier on an expressway where lots and lots of cars go by. He's going to power wash freedom on there and essentially make it cleaner. But then what happens is it's so filthy that it almost looks like he's put white paint on there. And so then the cop charges him with blocking the highway, which he wasn't. He was off to the side.
Well, not quite. If people want to get the I don't want to, criticize you for being wrong on the details, because a story like this is complicated and has some legal technicalities. Sure. But, they first came over because they thought we were spray painting.
Right, and, right.
They jumped up. Well, people can go watch the live video. It's 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. It's a fun video to watch. But the crux of it was that I actually got arrested for not showing an ID because when they asked me for ID, I instead read my rights card. And instead, I reserve my rights to remain silent. Can I speak to an attorney? Am I free to go? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they basically cuffed me as soon as I started, mid-sentence. They were like, nope, we're not doing this. And it's like, just even if they're legally justified in this, how big a dick do you have to be to say, look, sir, or to not just take the time to say, look, sir, this is how it works in Louisiana. This is our precedent. I'm just doing my job. Not that that's an excuse. I'm just doing my job. And if you don't, we asked you for ID. You're legally compelled to show ID in the state. If you don't, we're going to have to arrest you. You're going to get charged with a misdemeanor, both the police and the system. Would you like to show us your driver's license, sir? Just give me that opportunity, but they didn't. They just cuffed me. The fun thing is, I got dropped on my head, and this is because I went limp and mute, essentially strategically. I don't mean literally limp and mute the whole time, but when they asked me questions like, "You ready to go?" I'd say, "No attorney, no questions." And when they said it's time to go, I'd say, "That's nice," And if they touched me, I would go limp. And I made them carry me everywhere. And the stateies, before they got me to the jail where the cameras are, they dropped me on my head. But then for 3 days, I resisted. And I really played the strategy consistently. And I won. And it's a great story. And I'm almost embarrassed that so many times I've been arrested, I haven't really properly executed the strategy before. They came to get me to go to court after 2 days and said, "Okay, Mr. Kokesh, would you like to go to court? Are you ready to go to court?" And I said, Sure, absolutely. I'm totally ready. Except, you know, I do have a few things that I believe we have to take care of first. Where can I get a shave before we go to court? It doesn't work that way, sir. I said, okay, I can be flexible on that one. All right, but I do have a right to put on a business suit to be professionally presentable at court, and I'd like, how do I make arrangements to put on? So he said, it doesn't work that way, sir. I'm like, okay, well, I can be flexible on that, but I do have one more thing. I do need to speak to an attorney before I go to court. I know I have that constitutional right, and I would like to see an attorney first. I'd be happy to get up and cooperate if I can go see an attorney. And he said, we'll see you next week, Mr. Kokesh, and then close the door on you. But later that night, and after being moved in a wheelchair, they finally figured out that instead of giving me a wedgie in my stump suit, that it was easier to just pick me up and put me in a wheelchair and move me around a couple times. They tried to release me, and I wouldn't let them release me without letting me call my lawyer first. And, you know, I wouldn't even cooperate with the release. So on the way in, they stripped me without asking me, because I probably would have just changed myself. I don't think they asked. They just dragged me into the changing room and tore my clothes off and put a jumpsuit on me. So on the way out, it's kind of disturbing the first time it happens, you know, but I was going limp. So like, okay, whatever. I mean, getting dropped on my head was worse than being stripped naked by a bunch of prison guards. But on the way out, I made them do it in reverse. I made them take my jumpsuit off and put my clothes back on me just to say, up yours, and I'm not even going to help with this part of it. And then they wheeled me out of there and dumped me on the sidewalk with my papers and my personal effect. Wow. So, and all charges were dropped. So now we also have a false arrest case against them. Whereas if I had cooperated, you know, and I could have, I actually wanted to stay in there longer. Just to see what I could experience and what other constitutional failures I could experience for a potential lawsuit in the jail. And I was enjoying it. I was having a good time there. So now we have a bunch of lawsuits, pending or I should say in the works, you know, for false arrest, for violation of constitutional rights, both in the arrest and in the jail, and for the possibly accidental dropping me on my head. We'll see if they have the body cam footage or not. So there's all that. But yeah, this, you know, the strategy too of going limp and mute, it's really kind of a principled one. And it was so great. One of the guards who was wheeling me in a wheelchair, this woman, he was passing in the hallway, another guard asked, why is that inmate in a wheelchair? He can walk? Look at him. And he said, well, he thinks that what we're doing is criminal and he doesn't want to be an accessory to it. And I was like, yes, yes, you got it. He's listening. He's a
red pill one guy right there.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I read them, but I definitely planted a lot of good people.
Wow.
If a few people did this, you know, not only would you win more cases, but if a handful of people did this every day, just in Orleans Parish here, they, and a couple of guards told me this, like, you know, they would be forced to stop arresting people for bullshit, for the non-crimes, and they would be basically forced to prioritize, and you know, obviously we're talking to the people who let rape kits go untested while they're busting people for pot, although pot is decrim in Orleans Parish, so it is, you know, anyway. There's a lot more to that story. I'll leave it there. We got
Brian. And this is for people who are listening. This is a slice. This is the most recent slice of Adam's act. And this just goes on. And you know, you can make of it what you'd like. I personally find it edifying that there's someone like him out there doing this stuff. I don't know, you know, ultimately where I come down on, you know, more people doing it. But I definitely, Jesus, you know, it is – every time he does something, whether you think it's nuts or not, there's you know, you go, oh, God damn it, Adam. And then you watch it and you go, well, fuck. And you kind of get a little upset, and it's just one more, I'm talking as a viewer now, it's just one more, you know, absurdity in this long line. So anyway, that was sort of a long way to go. As you mentioned it, we connected here over some of the stuff that's happening in Acapulco. And I'll just get right into it then. We were one of the first outlets, at least in the cryptosphere, to kind of break the story, and then the Washington Post took it, quoted us, Daily Beast. We're all over the place. And
Dan, thank you for stepping up there as a journalist.
Well, it was important for us to cover it for the reasons that I think I've explained to you, but also because of how the media was handling it. But you come from a very interesting perspective on this, because you've actually been to the gathering that John and Lily forked. I have to be careful. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, a man by the name of John Galton, and his partner, who went by the name of Lily Devine, were down, and they were part of the anarchist community in Acapulco, Mexico. I think they were in part lured by, in a positive way, by Anarcapulco and some of the community a few years mm-hmm. back, and how that worked out. And then either they got disenchanted with the organizing of it, or just thought they could do something better. It's very much in the spirit.
Well, and if I may jump in there.
Go right ahead.
Worth illuminating that when you say lured, and I'm glad you clarified that, this was, you know, the central idea that Jeff Berwick put forth about living in Mexico as opposed to the United States, that, you know, even though the murder rates are higher if you're not involved with the cartels, it's safer overall. And, you know, I never had, like, I think it's all still, you know, reasonably safe, although my basis of comparison is Fallujah. So, you know, maybe that's not a great, you know, standard. But, I you know, if they say the murder rate in Acapulco is, oh my gosh, twice what it is in Chicago, which is, I think, what they've been saying, right, in the mainstream articles, and the first one, anyway, a few of the mainstream media articles, I think it came from the AP one, pointed that out.
Right.
But, like, your odds of getting murdered walking down the streets of Chicago are infinitesimally small. So twice of infinitesimally small is still very, very, very small. But this general idea that living in Mexico allowed for more freedom in the United States and was reasonably safe. And I think that idea has total legitimate merit. And I think that people who don't like where they live in the United States should consider that. I never went to make that decision for myself. You know, I believe that the United States is one of the best places on earth to live overall. It's an incredible statist nationalist community, if you will. You know, and it's also, you know, it's the United States is at the same time the seat of the biggest empire the world has ever known, and possibly our only hope of stopping it. So I'm kind of committed to here, and I never had to do that calculus for myself. Should I live in Mexico or not? But a lot of people, well, I should say at least a few dozen people did as a result of Jeff's promotion. And that's the genesis of the anarchist voluntarist community in Acapulco.
It caught on. And a lot of people went down there, including John and Lily. And they joined the gathering there a few times and got a little bit of notoriety. And then decided to fork it, which in the crypto community is very, very much in line with our thinking. You sort of take from the previous incarnations of something, and then you kind of go your own way if you don't like how things are going. And fork for us, for a lot, not everybody in the space for sure, but fork for us means a kind of freedom. So they forked it off.
Absolutely.
And called it Anarco Forco, or yep. Anarca Forco. And so the Forco idea started, I guess, last year, and they got some participants and did well. Then I'm not sure what happens next in terms of their involvement. There's rumors. There's a bunch of screenshots out there that have been sent to me, hearsay and all this other stuff. What we got back from people there, which is really all I could go with at the time, and these kind of stories, I have to kind of preface it for listeners who aren't, you know, knee deep in news. Ironically, they get clearer the further you move away from them. So the more time it takes, it actually, you learn more, because what you get initially is emotional reactions. We posted the mm-hmm. horrifying video, mm-hmm. Lily and Jason, and it's terrifying to watch. And so we, at this point, all I have is hearsay and circumstantial evidence. But what the community has, even that's fuzzy, but I'm going to go with it anyway. What the community has put forward is that this was a cartel hit of some kind, and cartel is certainly big.
Hold on. Let's be precise. I just want to say, let's be precise with our language. When you say the community has put forth this, I think it's worth identifying that everybody who jumped on that story right away and put forth, it was a cartel, they were competing with cartels, everything is safe, where it wasn't the community as a whole. The community as a whole questioned this right away. Those were people who are organizing and promoting and have an interest in the main Anarcho-Poco conference. Who
right. Report. And so,
and the Mexican authorities and the mainstream media mm-hmm. who put this simple, straightforward narrative of John was a threat to the cartels and the cartels killed him. And this is a
right. And that was sort of my point in that it's the word cartel along with the word community there, especially the word cartel has a very dog whistle-y type response from right. the United States. And it's kind of a just so story. It wraps everything in a bow and, oh, okay, this was some dirty hit.
Right, hold on.
And he was killed by the cartel. Go ahead. Sorry.
Since you raised the term cartel,
yeah.
I wanted to, for the purpose of this conversation, when I use the word cartel, I'm not talking about business cartels or monopolies. We're talking very right. specifically about the large underground businesses that deal drugs based out of Mexico that are extremely violent.
Right. And that's an important distinction to make, especially in our world where, you know, cartel is used, you know, both pejoratively and positively, but we meet it in the stereotypical sense. As it's popularly understood.
We're not trying to debate the application, use, or definition or scope of the word cartel. We're talking about the cartels in Mexico. You know what we mean.
Yeah, they're notorious, and okay. I'll just say this. Another public statement we released, which was semi-public on a Telegram group that we released by Lily. She made no mention of a cartel. And she, in fact, said, or kind of cryptically, for lack of a better phrase or pun, that watch out for other anarchists. And she put it in quotes.
We can say now, she has stated publicly that it was Paul behind it. And she has also stated publicly that she is waiting to tell the complete story. And she has removed her video, although it's been reposted several places. So she has come out and directly said Paul was behind this. She has done it cryptically in a few places, but she's done it directly publicly at least once that I'm aware of.
And we published...
And it's semi-public. Semi-public. It's like a...
We published the accusation. We published his name, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
So we did that as a quote, you know, because it was relevant. And again, parts, I should say, of the community, whoever that is, are dismissing it, or now they're saying maybe it wasn't that and it's the cartel. This is a really long way to get to a question for you. You've weighed in on it. You've come in with a sledgehammer here, and you have really, really weighed in on Twitter, I think on Facebook and then on Telegram. So what, let's kind of flesh out what you think about all this.
Well, I'm going to be very hesitant, you know, Ed, as we discuss in what I'm going to say in a sure. public forum about this, and part of it is that I don't want to put somebody off until we know who's really behind this. Although, you know, I was already on Jeff's bad side because, and this is like, you know, full disclosure of my background conflict with him, that, you know, I was supposed to get paid for speaking at last year's conference with a gold sponsorship and was blown off by him and the organizers during the conference about it. And they just kept making excuses as to why they couldn't do it. And I was supposed to get like a double whatever something for this year. And when I started, you know, demanding what I was promised for compensation, that's when he uninvited me using Larkin's bullshit attack against me as the excuse for that. And it, you know, so I at that point I was already like, you know, all right, I get it. You know, and Jeff was ghosting on me during this time. And you know, again, we've seen this publicly. I'm just going to stop myself right there talking about Jeff. But I will say just one thing, that I do regret my role in helping him establish credibility in general, in doing interviews with him and supporting him, you know, in going to his conference and speaking at his conference. I think I should have heeded the warnings about him that I saw online about bad business practices. And this is something I do want to make as a really important public statement that, you know, I made the mistake of thinking, oh, he's come out and said that he's a voluntarist now. He must be a good guy now. And, you know, that's there's so many fallacies behind that. But that's the temptation, because I know that I'm a voluntarist because I'm a good guy, because I care about people, because I want to see the world be a better place for people, because I believe in ethics and justice and principles. But just someone saying that, or saying that they agree with you on that, or recognizing that fundamental truth, doesn't change their true nature. And I think Jeff's true nature has been revealed in all this. And he even publicly threatened me today on Facebook and said, and this is the quote, "I'm taking you out next." So, like, this is someone who has serious anger issues and self-control issues, and I don't think there should be a community or a conference around him. And again, I'm sorry for any role that I had in bringing him up or in the movement or in his credibility. As for his role in this murder, I don't know anything for certain. So I don't want to say anything else, because it's all speculative and it'd be irresponsible to sort of, you know, name him as a suspect. But I'm not the first one to mention that possibility. And I wouldn't be mentioning it now publicly if I couldn't point out that Paul, the gentleman who was fingered in this immediately by Lily, has come out and suggested this theory that I hadn't even, that was a little just too crazy of all the things that I was considering. But Paul has come out and publicly said, at least suggested this theory, that this was somehow an inside job, and that Jeff basically arranged for it. And I don't even want to say anything more about that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's public. If people want to go to my personal Facebook page and see the statements that I've made thus far, you know, hey, get into it. If you really want, like, you want to get into this murder mystery, you could be on this for a long time. There are two semi-public chats on Telegram. One is called Drama Polko Uncensored, and you can get on that and see my conversations in there. And then one is just Anarchapulco something or other. But if you search Telegram for Anarchapulco, you can find a couple of groups there and join or lurk or what have you. And there are a lot of screenshots being passed around and all of there. You can read a handful of mainstream media stories. You can see the one that was more comprehensive that came out today, that was the second one to hit the Drudge Report from the Daily Beast. Yeah. Second one was Drudge, first one from the Daily Beast. I believe yesterday or the day before, they linked to the Washington Times, which was just basically the AP story. So I'm a little concerned that this is going to be used as a story like against anarchism, you know, voluntarism specifically. I'm digging. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm putting stuff together here.
So you're relevant for a couple of reasons, as you've explained, but working into what I consider to be the deeper subject, if anybody can put aside you know, the murder idea, which I realize sounds coarse. But so for the second, for the brief second, put aside the intrigue that is the murder.
Yeah, let me, so if you're going to change the subject that way, I do want to make clear, and I think you would join me in the sentiment. I mean, my first priority here is to find out what happened so that people are safe. I am concerned that whatever threat this is, even if this was just a cartel hit, I mean, if it's that easy to get, like, and the organizers of the conference seem to be brushing this fact under the rug as they promote this official story that it was a simple cartel hit and that John was killed for competing with the cartels. And I don't really believe that. I think that's unlikely. It's possible, but from everything we know, his business was extremely limited, very small at most. And he hadn't been, according to some people, dealing coke for months. Mm-hmm. And what he was like, it was just, but even if that's the truth, I can't eliminate that possibility. Jeff Berwick says he has contacts with the cartels and has confirmed that that's what it was, but hasn't substantiated that at all. But if that's true, then you're hosting a conference where you're selling drugs, and I mean the psychedelics in the ceremonies there, and you have people openly talking about drug use around a conference there. You shouldn't be telling people everything's okay. You should be telling people we're taking extra security measures. Hmm. You know, if not, like, hey, this isn't safe right now. So it's still possible that this mainstream story is the correct one. It just, the more you look into it, the less likely that it seems, and the more craziness and dishonesty you see around it that's very alarming. I'm sorry to change subjects again, but yeah, it's just, the intent here is I'm concerned about people's safety and I'm concerned about justice.
And did you know either John or Lily?
Yes, but only somewhat in passing. We had hung out and just chatted briefly at Anarchapulco, I think last year and the year before. And maybe we'd chatted a few times online or on Messenger, but we were very, very limited.
Okay. And so I think what, at least for the relevant side here, because we've kind of hit a snag where we don't really know what's going on. We have some ideas, some, I guess, intuitions about it, but I think right away people are going to say, do you see what happens when you do the crypto and the anarchy thing? A bunch of yahoos gets involved and they can't control themselves. And then they, I saw a post today that I thought was, if there's going to be any silver lining to this so far. And again, it's very early. People were saying, you know, people aren't running to the cops yet. People aren't doing this. You know, the community's trying to come together and work itself out in clumsy ways. You know, we're trying to figure it out. There's debates. There's infighting. It's just kind of all the...
Yeah, there's a vibrant conversation around this. But no, the thing about going to the cops, first of all, we don't know what Lily and Jason... Jason was a gentleman who was wounded on the scene.
Right.
And again, a lot of people are pointing out that the odds of him being shot three times and none of them hitting bone and only needing 6 hours of hospital treatment and then being released and then going home is unusual, that a cartel would leave, that a cartel would attack a group of three people, kill one, wound one, and leave one, you know, also very unusual. But there's a dead body. The Mexican police know about it. They're investigating this as much as they...
The American embassy knows about it, yeah.
Based on their incentives. The American embassy knows about it, and they're investigating it at least as much as they normally would an American death in Mexico. So there's nothing to be done by calling on government at this point. And I don't think anybody investigating is contacting members of the community to try to untangle the mystery and see what the motivations are. And the thing is, I also want to point out that we might never know that this could be one of those things that unless someone admits to what happened, you know, we might never, we might, like, we're, I mean, for the last I've been following this since it happened on February 1st. And today is February 7th. And you know, after two or three days, you know, I hit this wall of there's sort of these three possibilities that, you know, either it was an inside job or it was a simple cartel hit or it was some kind of hired hit. You know, I we're kind of, you know, at this wall in terms of the investigation right now, or at least I am, I am, where, and I'm not going to say anything about, you know, because I've been sent a lot of stuff that, like, I have so much more background on this and stuff I can't share.
Sure.
But I can say that none of the information I have really would confirm or rule out any of those three possibilities, and that in and of itself is kind of scary and disturbing, and I think anybody who goes and looks into this is going to have, you know, I've asked half a dozen people I know who are close to the situation now, what's your best theory and why?
Right.
And I've gotten six different answers.
Sure. And this goes to the heart of what I'd kind of, you know, more or less end on here, which is, okay, so from my perspective, my dealings with Anarcapulco and I guess Dana have been very, very, very pleasant, awesome. I just want to put it out there. And I've had no issues with them whatsoever. So this is not, I'm not putting Adam on to throw shade or anything. This is, Adam was a part of the, or, you know, part of the, that particular community for a while, as he's talked about. And he has weighed in as a celebrity within this community. He's crypto relevant. He can speak to a lot of these issues. The reason that I want Adam on so badly is really for this question, which is, does this essentially, you know, does this prove the anarchy idea can't work? And more importantly, how does the community move forward in when something like this happens? That's so there's the public, like we've talked about, the mainstream conception, and then there's the community sort of trying to work itself out, and then, you know, like what, as a leader is, I don't want to, you know, bestow that on you, because I'm
thank you,
but as a vocal, you know, activist proponent,
yeah, sure, no, I get it.
How do we go forward? How does this work itself out? What do you suggest?
Well, I got to respond to, you know, a lot of what you said in there, and it's, I mean, this is challenging for me. I'm not here to say that, you know, I've got all the answers or I've got this all figured out. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is trying to say, oh, because one person got killed, this philosophy is wrong or it doesn't work. I don't think they're going to that. But for the people, I mean, one of the reasons the mainstream media is picking up on this, like, they are, is that most people do not think like us, you know, white male INTJ analytical personality type that just like has to figure out objective truths. And even we have to admit that in most regards, and by, big sidebar here, when I give speeches, sometimes I always like to put my audiences on the spot, but sometimes I'll say, how many of you designed the cut of the shirt that you're wearing right now? And most of them, you know, no one said, you know, there's a smart answer, but, you know, smart ass answer, but nobody raises their hand or anything or says, yeah, I designed my shirt. And I say, well, look, in the area of fashion and design, you're all a bunch of sheeple followers then, you know, like, you know, it's just put yourselves in the shoes of people who feel about politics and government and the big issues of justice that we care about, the way that we think about fashion, you know, and they see a story like this and they go, oh. They might, and they're not thinking on an analytical philosophical level, but what they do see, and this is the legitimate threat here, and this is why the mainstream is pouncing on this, is not to discredit the philosophy. I don't think they're reaching to that. But they are trying to discredit the lifestyle, and sort of the philosophy by proxy. So if you say, look, living like an anarchist will get you killed, don't be an anarchist.
Right.
Then, you know, that's all they have to do to have that general negative effect that they're always looking to have here. And this isn't some conspiracy. This is just, you know, the ideology of most people in the media reflects the ideology of most people in the population, plus the spring pullers getting extra weight.
you hit it totally on the head. And I had a we put up the snippets of the Facebook videos from Jason and Lily, and the comments on YouTube. I mean, I'm sure you're used to it, but would make your hair curl. You know,
YouTube is especially
it sounds like someone, you know, it was a gift. You know, it sounds like great. You know, see, you know,
yeah, well, one less hippie, yes, kind of
thing. Yes. And I was blown away by it, which may say more about me than them. But anyway, I'm sorry.
But also bear in mind, I mean, the YouTube comment section is a very strong filter, in the sense that filters in the worst. And it's also one that's heavily been dominated by bots and trolls for a long time. So, like, I mean, I consider, like, Facebook to be, like, the infected, pus-filled, seeping, septic underbelly of the public conversation. But then YouTube is, like, what the shit from that, or I should say, YouTube comment sections are what the shit from Facebook drips onto.
Right.
You know, like, it's even one level worse. So, take that all with a grain of salt and know that there are deliberate efforts to derail, divert, and spread FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt in that conversation. And anybody who's listening right now who's gotten this far into this interview, who hasn't heard of COINTELPRO, go look up COINTELPRO. It's exactly how it sounds. It's a portmanteau that the FBI came up with for counterintelligence program. It's what they did to mess with activists in the 60s and 70s. There's a great Wikipedia article on it. Do a little more research, but you better frickin' know, if you want to keep up with this conversation, what COINTELPRO is. So there's part of your question I haven't gotten to yet, right? What do we do here?
Yeah.
So, and actually, first, about the lifestyle thing, I think there is a deliberate point of reflection that the movement should take here on what kind of lifestyles are we promoting, because a lot of people are very reactionary in their libertarianism, that they you know, proudly call themselves anarchists when they're anarcho-capitalists or voluntarists. I think it's a bad misnomer, but it's a long separate debate about semantics we get into. But there is a sort of reactionaryism that is really personified by John and Lily Forrester Galton, or Divine, however you want to refer to them.
Right.
I think John Galton is the, we should be embracing that. That's the main, you know, hashtag John Galton. That's how we're going to be identifying the story for a long time. It's the John Galton murder. Two people openly calling themselves anarchists, fleeing charges in the United States in order to set up shop where they're doing publicly drug-related stuff in Mexico. Yeah, that's going to be risky, one way or another.
Right.
Whereas what I've chosen is my expression of this, my ultimate expression of this lifestyle. For me, it's living self-sufficiently off the grid. And living in, you know, as much as possible an ethical lifestyle, and, you know, raising kids, I hope someday, unschooled, and, you know, with an ethical respect for their personhood as human beings, and to, you know, be an advocate for this message as best I can. So, and maybe that's, to a lot of people, my position is already very extreme. You know, and I do live like government doesn't exist in a lot of ways, but I don't pretend that it doesn't. You know, and so maybe it's, you know, getting, you know, being more careful about who we as honest libertarians associate with. And if it's someone like Jeff Berwick, people who have been caught publicly lying, people who have used dishonesty to promote their interests, to hurt other people like himself I guess I can say publicly, Jessica Kill, the main conference organizer this year, who really has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. A lot of people, like, you know, not just for me being uninvited, but for Derek Brose being uninvited, for policies around tickets and prices going up and value going down and so many other things. This just drama and nonsense around the conference. Anyway, I just hope everyone stays safe, you know, at least until we find out what's really happened here. If we ever do, if not, I hope everyone, you know, is paying enough attention, who's close to this, to adjust their security mentality accordingly. If you are going to Anarchapulco, if you've bought tickets and paid for the hotel and you don't think there's any particular danger and you want to support the conference, you know, just please be as careful as you can. I think the best advice is, you know, don't leave the hotel. Don't piss anybody off. This is a good time. And I'm a little afraid for myself here, having stepped in this vocally, publicly a little bit, but you know, I couldn't hold back what I've observed and what I've seen so far. You know, and I, again, I've never suggested publicly in any way that Jeff has anything to do with the murder. That's what Paul has done publicly. But there is enough dishonesty around Jeff Berwick from him himself that I've experienced, that other people have experienced. I don't think there should be a community around him. I think if Anarchapulco is going to continue at all, it should be handed off to the community somehow, or at least to a trusted community and run like a nonprofit. So it can't just be, you know, Jeff's scam drama circle. Who knows what he's doing with you know, the money around all of this, given his track record here. So, and again, I'm doing my best to speak precisely here. I really encourage everyone, if you're going to do any kind of, make any kind of decisions, think for yourself, check sources, check references, question everything, question people who are telling you, question me, because I might be wrong. I'll tell you, I will never publicly lead you astray. I can't say I'll never lie, because if you put a gun to my head like a cop, I will lie to you. In order to get that gun pointed away from me, I believe that lying is a violation of the, or that, you know, lying is, can be an act of aggression, but in that same sense, it can be defensive. I will never lie to you in my own interest or lie to you in any kind of deceptive way, but I may be misinformed. There's a lot of misinformation around this. I'm being fed conflicting accounts of several elements of the story by people who are close to it. So I may have some facts wrong in my analysis, but generally, you know, my advice is think for yourself. You know what the right thing to do is for you. Do that. Do it with confidence. Do it with a smile on your face. Be happy that you're alive and breathing in a world full of beautiful, wonderful, loving people. And it's unfortunate that we have to have these conversations every now and then, but someone has been killed, and we're willing to, or we should be willing to have the serious conversations that reflect just a basic value for human life and wanting to protect it and defend it and find out what's really going on here. So, Ed, I don't know if that's what you wanted to close on, but that's pretty much all I have to say about it. And you know, I want to thank everybody for listening with an open mind about this. And if people have any information that they think would be useful in figuring out what has happened here, please share it with me. You can find me on Telegram. I think if you just search for my name, although that's kind of private, and I'm there by my phone number, which I'd like to keep private.
we'll leave my private. You want us to link to it?
No, but people can email me at my general public email address, adam@thefreedomline.com. If you have anything, any insights about this to share that I haven't obviously covered, you know, please help me out here. If you look at the evidence and find something, please let me know. If you have information that I don't have, please help me out. I think there are only a handful of people who are really tracking this like I am, and only a handful of people who are closer to it that might have information that I don't. And also, if you have specific questions for me, you know, I've pretty much said everything I'm going to say publicly or share publicly. on Facebook. But if you email me and say you have some particular reason that you need me to substantiate something with screenshots, you know, you're not just show me because prove whatever you said, but you know, but if you have a reason, you know, I'm happy to share whatever background evidence I have to people who are serious about helping figure this out or get justice in this case.
Well, man, I lied to you. I said I was going to have you for a half an hour, and you stayed on for...
That's my fault for interrupting, but I'm very aware. And thank you for acknowledging that. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man. Take good care of yourself. We will link to all things Adam Kokesh in the show notes here. But he is, as he says, out there. Thanks again, Adam, for coming on, man. And take good care of yourself.
My pleasure, brother. Peace and love to you.